maybe take a little bit of your time and talk mostly about the album, but, you know, touch on a few other things real quick.
Whatever you like to do, sir.
So at first glance, you're probably best known for, well, I wouldn't say best, but you're probably well known for your work with Danger Danger.
Yeah, that one got a bit of exposure back in the day, I suppose.
I think so. You know, you toured around with the Kisses and the Alice Coopers of the world and
things
like that. And, you know, I have to admit, I do have some live Danger Danger at home. And it probably will.
I won't hold it against you, but yeah.
No, it's probably going to come out of the music bag to play.
All right.
And I think we might do Hoochie Coochie. What is it? Hoochie Coochie?
Rock and Roll Hoochie Coochie. Yeah, we did a Rick Derringer cover.
Yep. I think
they ended up on a live EP that Epic released as a promo back
I might, in 19. Yeah, I got that thing. I might spin that. That's pretty hot, actually.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And those were really awesomely fun days. I mean, talk about a childhood dream come true. My first concert was Kiss on the Destroyer tour in 76.
Oh, man.
You know, I was in the very last seat of the stadium going, man, that's what I want to do someday. And to get the call that we were going to be opening for those guys, actually on a couple of different tours, was just incredible good fortune. For considering that was some of my earliest musical influences, and like I said, being the first concert I ever saw was it.
Yeah, man. Kiss
no,
was one
no,
of those.
No regrets there.
No, Kiss was definitely one of those for a lot of us.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
For a particular age group, if you're at the right age at the right time, they were the perfect band. You know.
Absolutely. Oh.
And as a guitarist, Ace Frehley was just really a great. That was the first stuff I was picking up by ear off my records, and he was a great amalgamation of all the classic British rock guys. You know, he played the kind of Page and Clapton kind of approach to guitar.
Yeah, very Yardbird like.
Yeah, absolutely. Just but really, really straight ahead British rock kind of playing with you. Great vibrato, great constructed parts, as kind of Slash did later with Guns N' Roses. You know, either one of them got like an immense amount of respect in the music community. But when you look back at it, it's like these are great pieces of guitar work. You know?
Slash is a great guitarist, and certainly Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
Whether you like that particular kind of music or not, that's a top album. You know,
I have immense respect for Slash in particular. In really well constructed parts. I just kind of remember when that band came out, everybody was kind of dogging it because it was like, oh, he's drunk, he's sloppy.
Right.
But man, when you listen to it, man, it's really well done stuff. You know, not about it.
I think Slash was the kind of guy you didn't look at; you just listened to because
you
don't want to form you don't want to form your opinions about what he does. By the way, he was carrying the JD bottle around, so
Well, absolutely.
So it probably wasn't
kind of part of that band's image, certainly, but. Now, there's a lot of integrity behind what he's doing.
Absolutely. So. The music was certainly behind that band, too, for a while.
No doubt about it.
You know. And, okay, so we go from there, right? And then you did a lot of work in the studio scene.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of stemming from right before the Danger Danger thing came along, I was kind of living here in Dallas, Texas, and kind of getting into the studio scene and just, radio and TV jingles and such and some record projects along the way. But, it was just a great way to help make a living being a guitarist. All irons in the fire is necessary, trust me.
Goofiest jingle you ever worked on?
Oh, God. I can easily tell you my goofiest session, but that was a record session. But goofiest jingle? We used to do all the Chuck E. Cheese stuff.
Oh, nice.
Including the music that the bears would play inside the restaurants, you know?
Oh, really?
we used to do all that music here in Texas.
That's pretty cool.
Goofiest session by far, and I've admitted this once before, so this will continue to haunt me, but I played on a Barney record.
You did, huh?
The Grand Purple one, yeah.
I'll
never forget it because it was, I was running Direct Electric on just some, it was like, Old McDonald had a farm, stuff like that, but...
Yep.
They needed an acoustic guitar on a track, and it was She'll Be Coming on the Mountain.
Oh, really?
So, of course, when you're recording acoustic, you've got the microphone, you're in this little room, and Barney had already been there and recorded his tracks. Unfortunately, he wasn't there. I would have loved to have seen the guy that actually did the voice. But he had gone for the day, and I was in there, and, of course, the track comes on, and I've got the acoustic guitar with the open mic, and she'll be coming around the mountain when she comes.
Hi there!
I hear this. I start laughing, and I just couldn't recover. They had to restart the track about four times because I would just keep hearing that voice, and I just couldn't stop laughing.
Coming around the mountain, take 24.
Yeah, exactly. Come on, Timmons, get it together.
Come on, kid.
Hey, there, and it's all, man.
Oh, man.
That one goes down as pretty freaking silly.
You mean there's a guy? You mean Barney's not real?
I'm not.
What have you done to me and all
I'm just saying maybe he has, like... you know, kind of like the Paula Abdul thing, or millions of it. You know, like there might be other voices involved.
Hey, you worked with Paula. Sure. You worked with Paula, so you might know more about that. But
well, I did, but I wasn't there when she did her vocal check. She was as sweet as could be. And,
I bet she was. Yeah. She can dance like no other, too.
Yeah, oh, no doubt about it. So I get the feeling that was, yeah, they had somebody ghosting her on some earlier stuff. I don't think this particular record she did, but
yeah,
it's one of those things to fatten up the voice or whatever. Not uncommon. A little ghosting happening, but she was awesome. Only worked a couple of different days, but it was just great.
All right, now the most, before we get to your latest release, mm-hmm. Resolutions, which I dig completely, let's talk about your choice to go to the University of Miami to study jazz guitar for a few years.
Absolutely. I was self-taught as a player. You know, I started playing when I was about 5 years old. And around the time of 15, 16, I started taking my first, proper guitar lessons. I had been reading, all the guitar magazines, and was reading about guys that did, studio work. And I thought, man, that might be something I could do to, make guitar my profession, because I was pretty realistic that, making it in my local rock band is a long shot at best. So I recruited a local teacher named Ron Pritchett back in Evansville, Indiana, where I grew up. And he started teaching me the basics of how to read and how to, but he also started turning me on to some jazz stuff, like Barney Kessel and Joe Pass,
uh-huh.
Wes Montgomery, Otto Peterson on the piano, and really started, really just broadening my ears and really, listening to a wide variety of stuff. But when it came time to go to college, the local university where I grew up, Evansville, Indiana, had a classical guitar program. So I was trying to, make mom happy by going to college. But by them having a guitar program, I thought, well, I could do that. I can still study jazz with a local guy. And I was playing in a rock band 3 or 4 nights a week. And so I was getting quite a bit of a variety of input and learning a lot of music and playing a lot. But after a couple of years of the classical program, I'd been hearing all along about University of Miami and, Jaco Pastorius and Pat Metheny and Steve Morris. And these guys I was really starting to be interested in have gone there. So I thought, that's the place for me. I mean, I love classical music and classical guitar, but I was much more into the electric world, so I couldn't afford to go down to audition, so I had to send in a tape.
Hmm.
So a buddy of mine there in town had a little 4-track recording rig and some keyboard gear, and we recorded, like a version of Misty and this Santana-sounding tune, and, I wasn't a great jazz at that point, but I was learning about, playing over chord changes and stuff, and so I guess the demo was good enough to let the kid in from Indiana, and I was there from 83 to 85, and by far the two biggest years of growth for me as a player. A lot of it attributed to the school, a lot of it attributed to just the other players that were there. There was such a high level of musician there. It was just incredible, and I was gigging 6 nights a week in a top 40 band.
Yeah.
My first summer on from when I was down there, so just nonstop growth and learning.
Right.
Being inspired by the other players, certainly, and by the faculty. So it was either you're gonna improve greatly, or you're gonna go home really bummed out because you suck.
Yeah, because you're no good. You can't.
Luckily, I chose the former, and just really got inspired by it. Just grew so much.
All right, let's take that to where you are now, or let's take that to the album Resolution.
Right. Okay.
Now, how did your experience there translate into that album? Because I hear, I certainly hear some jazz influence, and I hear I hear it over other things, but man, it's still that's a rocking album.
Well, the intent was Mike and I decided that we just really wanted a really raw, natural sounding 70s rock record. We didn't want a bunch of overdubs. In fact, you may have noticed there's only one guitar performance on each song.
Yeah, right.
There's no multiple takes and multiple parts. It's all just strictly power trio, but there's no doubt that once you've really listened a lot to jazz and appreciated it and learned the workings of it, well, you never really learned all of it, obviously, but it's just the more you've experienced it and absorbed it, even when I'm playing straight rock and roll, there's inherent things about the feel of it, I think, that are very directly influenced by that time. Whether it sounds like I'm swinging or not, there's a little bit of that in there in my phrasing and just my approach to how I hear music, how I phrase it,
how you feel.
Choice, even though it may not be chromatic style bebop, though there's a few things in there that are nods to that style. There's so many components, aside from the obvious vocabulary of jazz, that that add up to a great influence.
So you added another paint to your palette for sure.
No, absolutely. That's exactly right.
And then you can take that and blend it with those other colors, man. And
sure.
Before you know it, you got your own thing.
That's the intent anyway. And you're always growing and trying to, achieve more of a personal style and touch and everything. But there's some pretty obvious influences from other players on there for me as well. So. There really is quite a bit of influence from those years, whether it's in an obvious rock or jazz situation or not,
Yep. But, hey, yeah. I just want to talk about one song on the album. There's 11. There's a nice bonus track there on the end.
Yeah.
Is it Helipad?
Yes.
This song, the title. I picture a helicopter even like taking off of this location and going somewhere else, and that's what that's what the song does to me.
Great.
It really lifts me and then takes me away.
Awesome.
Where's the inspiration to that particular track?
Well, okay, there's some instrumental music is obviously a very interesting genre. There's very specific meanings behind certain songs on the record.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, this isn't one of them.
Really?
This song, well, and that's the beauty of coming up with the right title once you have a piece of music. That actual piece was started as a jam session with the drummer Mitch Marine and bassist Mike Dane. That was those guys. They were just pounding away on that doom 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 doom.
Yeah.
And so they were jamming that as we were working in the studio, and I started coming up with some things to play over it. But that literally was just a pure musical inspiration. There wasn't a specific meaning behind that.
All right, how about the meaning of the title?
From the inception. And there's some music that happens that way, and there's some music like tracks like Gone or Deliver Us or Beware Dark Days that have very specific meanings as I'm writing it. But that was one that was pure just, musical inspiration. Let's see where this goes, and we'll see where it takes us.
Well, then
I've had some very interesting email, feedback from some, war veterans. That say, man, I really love this track because it puts me back, and when I'm in the chopper,
you can hear the blades.
That's why it was like, okay, that's what I started reminding us of.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought, man, that sounds like a great title, and this is just maybe it'll give somebody the inspiration to kind of conjure up their own images, but it does.
But
that's
success.
The thing. But it could mean we could have called it Steve or Fred or something, and. But somebody still might have gotten that that imagery out of it. But that's the beauty of the lack of lyrics in the instrumental music is that it can just, it's open to complete interpretation.
And the art behind a good title.
There you go.
The positioning of it on the album.
You struggle with and really think long and hard and try to get the right running orders for the best experience.
That's a nice two.
I don't know.
A nice two-hole right there. Absolutely. Get on base and let the 3 and 4 guys knock you in. Hey.
There you go. But I'm a lifelong Yankees fan because...
Oh, we got to go now.
don't take that personal. But, yeah, I did eventually live in New York. But just from being a child, my older brothers were into the 60s Yankees.
So sure, well, like, Murderers Row.
Mandel and Maris and Bobby Richardson and Cleet Boyer. And
I don't like those Yankees, but I'm into the 60s Yankees too, man.
There you go. The 60s Yankees were awesome. And in the 70s, the early 70s Reds, the Big Red Machine.
Yeah.
Bench and Rose. And then,
you don't know anything. Baseball never existed for you again.
But, honestly, after the late 70s, I get interested around the playoffs and all that, and I like checking it out, but...
Hey, man, thanks for your time.
Oh, man, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and thanks for rescheduling for me. Much appreciated.
No trouble at all. I wish you well.
Thank you, sir. Well, thanks for spinning the record, man. I really appreciate
it. No trouble. Thanks for putting out a good one, and I look forward to the next one. And I got to say, you got a nice home there at Favored Nations.
Oh, man, those guys have been so awesome. I'm just very, very blessed to be working with those guys. So.
Yeah, they got a nice thing going.
No doubt about it. We appreciate that.
So you take care of that, and they'll take care of you.
Exactly.
I'll catch up with you some other time.
That sounds great, man. Anytime.
All right, brother. Peace.
Thanks, bro. Bye.